You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Anyways, your boss gonna come over to you and be like, hey, I want you to slap me really hard and I'm not gonna be mad. And I just was like, period.
Arasha, a beloved Smosh cast member known for keeping her composure while chaos erupts around her and for pulling elaborate pranks on the rest of the Smosh cast. Some viewers have described her as the eloquent host of Smosh, but today we find out she might have actually been a bit of a problem child with the wild side. I'm Anthony Padilla, and I spent a day with Arasha to find out what made her the performer she is today. Hello, Arasha.
Hello. I think that's the first time we've ever shook hands.
I think so, too. Usually we just go straight to high fives or slaps or...
I was going to say hugs.
But I think you know the first thing that we're going to talk about today.
I guess I know now. That one time we high-fived.
That one time we high-fived and the one side was your hand and the other side was my face.
Exactly, when I high-fived your face.
Yeah, that was great. We didn't even know each other that well. Because it was a few months after I came back to Smosh. It felt like I was in the middle of like my hazing period and I was just finishing it up with that video. I think it was the last video of the year that we shot.
Yeah.
Was Guess Who Slapped Me. Shane started that. Thank you for starting that trend, Shane. But after the first few slaps, I was like, oh, everyone's just gonna go super light on me. We don't know each other necessarily well enough for them to know how hard they can go. In the back of my head, I was like, okay, it's gonna be real simple. I mean, they could go more if they want, but it's fine. I guess it'll just be a little love tap. And then you came in, I think you were the fifth slapper maybe?
I think I was second.
You were super early.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt that slap for months.
No, don't say that.
Minutes, hours, minutes, only seconds actually.
I knew you were mad.
No, I wasn't actually mad.
You're mad.
I wasn't actually mad.
You're mad at me.
Did you actually think I was mad at you?
I remember at the holiday party, like coming over to you and just being like, I'm so sorry.
I know, I was like, it's all right. It's okay.
Yeah.
But you were like, you still thought I was mad, huh?
I was, okay, if I recall, I feel like I remember right before everybody was like gathered around the office.
Yeah.
And I feel like you were being like, guys, like, go for it.
I did. I was like, just go for it.
Yeah.
Just go for it.
And so I just was like, consent.
Yes.
Has been given.
No, it was for real.
And I just felt like it would be fun.
And it was. I think the clip has like 15 million views on Instagram alone.
Right. And you know what I really particularly loved, which totally was not my objective, is that I saw so many comments being like, Arasha slapped her boss. It makes me feel like I slapped my boss.
People are living vicariously through you.
Right. People are like, this is for everybody who's ever been like pissed off at their boss. Which, again, I truly was not mad at all. There was zero malice behind it. It was simply just like, I know we had only known each other for a few months, but I did feel like you were a great friend already.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like,
you knew
I
could take it. You knew that I wouldn't actually be mad.
It's kind of like in a zoomed out lens, it's a little bit like seizing the opportunity, right?
Yeah. When are you ever going to get that opportunity again?
When is your boss going to come over to you and be like, hey, I want you to slap me really hard and I'm not going to be mad?
Yeah.
And I just was like, period.
Yeah.
And I can.
And you had the courage to go for it.
And I feel like I faced a little bit of like being on the edge for a while. Like, I feel like the rest of the cast too was like, I don't know.
About like actually doing that?
About like after the fact. I feel like I stepped back in line and I was like looking around and I was like, where are my friends?
I think people were unsure what would happen because a lot of people did not know me well enough to know how I would react to that.
Trust me, I was panicking. I went over to so many people and I was like, was that okay? Like, what should I do?
No.
I'm so sorry.
Do you think that this is reminiscent of that era in your life that you told me about? You were like, you kind of had this like problem child, class clown era before you hit a certain point where everything kind of shifted. When I see you amongst the rest of the cast, I feel like you bring a very unique element to the dynamic. A little bit more professional in certain ways. Like, everyone loves when you are the host. You are such a great host. Like,
thank you.
You bring a little bit more of that.
Poise.
Yes, that's exactly the word I was looking for. But that's such a shift from that era in your life that you told me about.
I'm not sure necessarily if something inside of me wanted to make that shift as much as the external circumstances. I think growing up felt like, you know, I would never have been described as professional or poised when I was a kid. I was constantly like trying to be the class clown and just kind of speaking up and, you know, interrupting teachers and just being that presence in the room, very loud.
What do you think that was? Like, where do you think that came from?
I've always really enjoyed comedy. And there's always been sort of like this internal voice in me that maybe other comedians can relate to as well, of just like, you know, when circumstances happen around you and you're like, oh, something's right here. And you're like, I got to say it. And I would put it out there. It's just naturally who I am to like to want to share my voice and put myself out there. And I do enjoy the spotlight. I do like the attention. I like being able to be in front of an audience, but it wasn't always welcomed, you know? I mean, again, like teachers obviously didn't love it. And I wasn't ever popular in school as well. I constantly was feeling like the outsider and different than my peers. I struggled to fit in. When you're in that position, it's very difficult to be bold and take a risk with your jokes.
Yeah, and you mentioned that there were certain things in your early life that you think put you in that position of feeling a little bit more like an outcast.
You know, I grew up in Texas, in San Antonio. But before that, my entire family was born in India, including me. We immigrated when I was maybe like 2 years old. It was very young. And my parents were in their mid-20s. It was very different and very difficult because...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
My parents were kind of being raised at the same time as my brother and I.
Yeah, they were learning about the culture. They were learning about what was expected.
They were learning English.
Oh,
you know?
True. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, they...
And you were learning English at the same time.
Right.
That's wild, yeah.
It was very challenging, but there's almost like this sense of cohesion among the four of us, my immediate family, because of that. We all sort of started at the same time and... You know, admittedly, that did give me some setbacks. At the same time, it also challenges me to, you know, get ahead and really want to give reason to that sacrifice. What my parents did is no small feat. I mean, that to just kind of uproot your life and move to a completely different continent and be around an entirely new set of societal beliefs and traditions and values, like... That continues to change. I mean, my mom just learned the word bitching, and she loves it.
Did she say it all? Just
oh my
sentence?
God! She's like, "You calling me the bitch?" She loves it, and I'm like,
that
"Where?"
That outfit is really bitching.
And thank you. And she would say the same.
Yeah.
But growing up, like, if I were to say anything close to that, like, that would be immediate punishment, you know? Or like, how could you say something like that?
Because it's just a bad word.
Yeah, it's so interesting to see this like adjustment that they've made, this like adaptation of becoming Americanized, you know?
How do you think that affected you in school?
A lot of the times I think it translates into material items. My friends around me would all be wearing like, you know, Vera Bradley or like all these like Uggs, all these brands that they loved and would express. And I would late catch up onto that and be like, oh, okay, that's what we need to get. But then I would go home, I would tell my parents that this is what I needed. And it wasn't quite computing with them that I needed that specific pair of Uggs, you know?
Yeah, they're like, these look just the same.
Exactly.
Close enough.
Oh my gosh. And it was a nightmare. I just was like, please, I need these specific ones. Even though those look exactly the same and are $150 cheaper, mm-hmm. I need those. But that's just not where my family was, both culturally and financially. Mm-hmm. I mean, growing up, I moved homes like every year. I wasn't at the advantage of being able to just like spend money like that. So I didn't sport the name brands like a lot of my peers. And that had me feeling, honestly, like a loser.
Yeah, and you were also telling me that it kind of pushed you in a way, like all those struggles that you had when you were younger, it may have ultimately led you to, push harder to advocate for yourself and be a little bit more independent.
I mean, I'm still young, so I'm still working on unlearning a lot of that. And a lot of the times it has to do with my frugality, right? Like shopping is so hard for me because I am standing there holding this like $20 sweater being like, I don't know if I need it mm-hmm. because my parents were so, at the time, strict with money. And, you know, these days, again, like that adjustment has caught up to them too, where these days they're a lot more lax and being like, you know, treat yourself and get what you want. But I'm still stuck in the childhood lessons of don't spend money where I don't need it.
Can you point to anything that contributed to that poise that you would describe?
I think in high school, but I found myself in the elective of speech and debate, and which I was on the speech side of that. So it was essentially competitive acting. Mostly it comes down to preparing a 10-minute performance that you will then, on the weekends, go to another high school and compete with other high schoolers, all other people who have prepared their speeches, their performances.
Fuck that.
As a high schooler, yeah.
I would never have done that. Put me in front of a class of 12 kids. I'm like, no. Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh. And mm-hmm. and all other high schoolers, right? They're all the same age as you. And then there's judges who are full grown adults.
Yeah.
And your fate is in their hands.
The idea of my future being in someone else's hands just completely terrifies me.
It's a control thing, right?
Yes.
It's like, how do I let someone else manage something that is so important to me, like my career?
Mm-hmm.
And
it all comes down to them saying yes or no, and that's it.
Right.
It could be for any reason. It could be because the day of the week and how they feel.
Totally. I mean, that's all we said in speech was, you know, it's subjective. So for me, I tried taking control in the different ways that I could, which was definitely the earliest sight of my OCD. I would be sitting in these rooms, and at the time, I equated them to superstitions. I had very specific things that I needed to do. I couldn't cross my legs if there were like lines on the classroom floor, like I had to put my feet inside of the square.
Oh.
My hands had to like specifically sit a certain way. When someone wished me good luck, I was only allowed to say thanks. Like very specific things.
So you were all in your head. Like
oh, yeah.
At that point, you can't even be aware of your surroundings because you're clocking everything.
I tried to take control where I could. And then when I started seeing results, when I found success in the activity, I couldn't help be like, okay, that's why I'm winning, because I have done all these things and I need to do all these things or else I won't win.
Do you think any of that came from feeling like you didn't have control in your earlier life? I mean, you were moving a lot. You didn't get to choose what school or what country you were living in. Like that was all kind of just thrown at you.
Maybe it is some sort of approval thing that I'm almost just bringing to words now. Like my parents, because they made this brave decision to move our family to America, it's always felt like almost the sense of guilt of mm-hmm. I need to make sure it's worth it.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people who have immigrated say the same thing, like especially when their parents really put themselves out and, you know, completely uprooted themselves out of everything that they were familiar with to give their children a better life. Did your parents tell you, like, this is for you, kind of? Like, we're doing this for you?
Yes, I always heard, for me and for my brother, it's for a good education, for good opportunities, for a good life, you know? I mean, those are a lot, those are very strict Indian values, you know, mm-hmm. to provide for your kids and make sure that they are financially stable and you know, that they build a family of their own. And that's all that my parents have ever been concerned with. So for me, I have turned my passion of performing and being on stage into this idea of I can make this a successful career and I can turn around and I can show my parents, like, you did this for a reason.
You can't fault any parent for saying that. In fact, it might have helped you in many ways to hear that. But at the same time, there's that balance that comes with that positive. There's that balance of, oh, now I gotta live up to that expectation.
A little bit. It's funny that you use the word expectation, because that is something I really identify with. Arasha actually means expectations.
What? You're named Expectations?
Right. So my parents were like, you better do good, bitch.
Holy shit.
Right.
Arasha means expectations, not just one either. It's plural.
Oh, yeah. Really good expectations, which I constantly try to live up to. But maybe it's with speech and debate. Maybe it's, you know, growing up and not really feeling like I fit in or had a solid group of friends. But validation has always been something I cared too much about. It just sort of becomes like, I think I'm doing a good job, but this judge circled 6 on the paper. So that means they're right. Or, you know, I think I'm being kind and friendly at school, or I'm doing a good job being a good friend, but all of my friends have turned on me. So what's the truth here?
And do you feel like all of this played a part in you getting a role at Smosh?
Definitely. It was a moment of like, okay, I need this. I don't know whether or not I was supposed to be at these auditions, but I was. And once I showed
up. Supposed to be like it's fate, or supposed to be like you weren't allowed to be there?
Well, because I had received a message, right, from a casting director saying like that I was requested to be there. So I had shown up, and after I had booked Smosh, I found out that nobody was actually requesting me and that the casting director had just sent that message to a few other actors.
Do you think they said that to give you the confidence that you were specifically like picked out?
I'm not sure. I've been asked that a couple of times, that like, you know, since I had felt like I was requested, did I come in with more confidence?
Yeah.
And maybe, but I had only been in LA for like 4 months.
Now you're supposed to struggle way longer than that.
Oh, you're telling
way
me.
Way longer.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be years. You're supposed to reach rock bottom first.
Which I don't know if I would have like stuck around. I'd like to think that I have that tenacity and passion to stick around. But because of the whole validation thing, I think I would have been like, I need to book something to give me this sense, this like promise of it's coming. And Smosh definitely has done that. I mean, I definitely am grateful and so blessed to have gotten that job, to have been a part of this cast. And I'm constantly reminding myself how lucky I am to have joined the cast.
I hope you feel like you truly, truly deserve this, because you do.
Thank you.
Absolutely. A lot of people, when they grow up, become someone that they would have looked up to when they were younger. Someone that they needed, or maybe would have made an impact on them if they had that person to look up to. Do you feel like you've become someone who, when you were younger, if you had yourself now to look up to, you would have felt, I don't know, more inclined to grow up with confidence or to be more yourself? Or
I wholeheartedly do. Yeah. I think, you know, as you said, everything, you know, makes you who you are today. So I wouldn't change a thing, but I do believe that the person who I was growing up, struggling to fit in, you know, having been bullied for being different or unaware of what's going on around me, it definitely, again, equipped me with some habits that I'm not proud of and that I'm working to shed off. Going into even like Smosh, I remember thinking like the goal is to get everyone to like me.
Right. Did you find yourself like going to the comments being like, does everyone like me?
Absolutely.
I feel like that's inevitable almost. It's you can't help
You can't.
But feel like that's where the feedback is, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially like on videos that like center around you.
Yeah.
Like I did like an eat it or yeet it Indian food, you know? I was horrified. I was so nervous that people were going to be like, no one cares.
Right.
You know?
Or if it does poorly, you're like, oh, it's because of me.
Totally. And I was so shocked when I saw the comments. And it was the South Asian fans rising the hell up.
Rise up.
Seriously. I mean, everybody, I remember I was talking about how my brother and I like cannot do cardamom.
Yeah.
And it's just a very specific like Indian spice. And so many people in the comments were like, dude, I spit that out every time. Mm-hmm. It's in my mouth. Mm-hmm. And it warmed my heart to just know like there were other people having the same experiences as me. And when I grew up, I never thought that. Everything that I was facing at home, I was like, I am the only one wearing off-brand Sperry's. Like, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, there are so many people experiencing all of the same, and in a world that felt alone and isolated, it's actually just full of people very similar to me. And so that's what I think of now whenever I'm at Smosh and just kind of saying whatever I need to say. It's tough because in the room, people are reacting and you can't control behind the camera how people are gonna deal with it. And sometimes the comments feel like, let me in on what's going on. What are people thinking? Was this video good? Was I good enough? And the comments will validate that. And then eventually I shifted into, I feel good about that video.
Right.
I had a lot of fun filming that. Who knows when it's gonna come out? Maybe I'll watch it when it comes out, but I certainly will not be looking and seeing what other people are saying about it.
Fans would not expect you to struggle with confidence. You seem very confident when you show up on camera. Is that an effort to, I don't want to say fake it till you make it, but kind of just like be what you want to be kind of thing?
It's totally a fake it till you make it. Every year I have like a little word of the year. And the past like 3 years, it's been confidence.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, it's so directly, I think, equated to my childhood and my background and everything. It's just because I have been screwed over by thinking I know how I feel about something, but everybody else is thinking something else. And I can't afford for that to be different. So a lot of the times that reveals itself as judgment and a lot of it self-judgment. I will judge myself before anybody else can. So if I'm saying something on camera, I'm already being like, that was bad. That wasn't funny. That wasn't engaging before other people can say it. Because I don't want to be in situations that I was in when I was a kid, when I was thinking, oh, this is the right thing, or, oh, I am this. But then I'm clued in to everyone around me being like, actually, this. And then it's like, okay, so embarrassing. I never want to be on the outside again. I am always going to try to be informed about other people's opinions and adopt them as my own. And that's that.
I feel like it only takes one instance as a kid of feeling like, oh, that thing that I thought about myself wasn't what everyone else thought. You know, you're trying to fit in. You just want to be accepted. You want to feel like you belong. And then you find out that you don't belong.
A lot of kids get bullied, and that is the moment that they're just like too self-conscious. Before I was bullied, I just remember like I wouldn't even like look in mirrors, really. I was not concerned with my appearance or the presentation of myself at all until it was like this moment of like, oh my gosh, okay, I need to start caring about that and I need to start wearing the clothes that fit right and I need to start wearing this because everybody has this.
They need to be main brand.
Right. And so it just felt like this huge loss of myself, which really sucked. And I'm still trying to find it again. The only thing that speaks to me is gratitude. Giving back and just constantly reminding myself of all the amazing things that I have. I'm always telling my friends too, like, so many people are in LA alone. So many people are like living with random roommates or, you know, they don't have an abundance of money or resources. They're just like lost. And they have these dreams of wanting better for themselves. And I feel so lucky that I have a network out here. I have a community. I have an amazing job and projects that I'm really sinking my, is it toes into? Is it feet?
Teeth.
I really just have to stop using expressions. Teeth. It's my teeth. Oh, my God. And I said toes. Oh, my God.
I love that.
That is so embarrassing.
So many projects I'm sinking my toes into is amazing.
That is
actually
so embarrassing.
I imagine it was just sand and it was like a beautiful beach. But that's cute. Like, look at Angela saying, I'm not trying to blow shit up your ass.
She said that?
She said, I'm not trying to blow shit up your ass.
Okay. See, at least I've got an excuse.
You got an excuse. ESL.
But I'm sinking my teeth into lots of personal projects.
I like sinking my toes into projects personally.
That's so embarrassing.
I hope you know that you having, you know, you mixing up a word here and there while it might feel embarrassing in the moment, that like people watching are like, yes, thank you. I would have messed that up too. Or it just feels so nice to see someone else who is in the spotlight like you are, who they do look up to, make such a simple mistake or just say something slightly off and know that it's okay. I just think it's so cool that there are so many people out there who will be inspired by you and will see what you're doing and will gain the confidence themselves, the confidence that you're looking for. They can gain the confidence by watching you gain confidence.
I certainly hope so, right? Like, that's the goal. You know, as you know, right, we get a lot of not just the comments, but messages, right? Like, you ever go through those DMs?
Occasionally. I'm trying not to anymore because they're not, it's not even.
It's not worth it sometimes.
It's not worth it.
I peruse sometimes, and it's particularly because I have found a pattern of some people will reach out and say something like, hey, Arasha, like, I'm currently in India. Like, my parents do not believe in the industry. They do not think that I can make it. But seeing you in Smosh makes me think that I could do that one day. And those are the DMs that I always respond to. Because that is, I think, my chance of, like, actually connecting with people and not just doing the, I made it and so I'm representing, which is, like, it can feel like an easy message that I'm sending out there. But I want to do one step further by actually communicating with these people and being like, you totally can. Like, again, I equate it to accident that I ended up at Smosh, but in an accident that the universe was certainly preparing for. And I needed to show up that day and book this job, and it is probably for 100 thousands of other people's journeys too. Mm-hmm. So it feels like my due diligence to reach back out and say something like, I didn't have anything. I didn't have anyone. I just showed up, and I showed up authentically as myself. And that's why I was hired.
Yes.
Not because they needed to fill some sort of quota or whatever, you know?
To balance that, you were telling me that you have these other outside projects that you're working on as well. Can you talk about some of those?
Well, this year, I also started my podcast.
Mm-hmm. Spitball?
Yes, mm-hmm. Spitball, which was great. I mean, I had wanted to do a podcast, I think, since, like, I think a proper, like, 2 years before I actually started it. And I was under the impression that I needed to wait. I thought somebody else will be casting for a podcaster, or, you know, some opportunity will come my way or something like that. And again, maybe some sort of accident or whatnot. But one of my best friends, Rowan, she had gotten an audition that was for two podcasters. And, you know, she was like, I think we'd do really well with this. So we sent in an audition. And right after we did the audition, we were like, there's something here. Like, this was a great vibe. And we enjoyed it. We had a good time. And we were like, you know what? The audition.
Let's just do it ourselves.
Let's just do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And thus, like, Spitball was born. I'm excited to see where it goes. And I'm super psyched to be doing that. Because it's also a control thing, right? Like, with Smosh, I'm not necessarily in a leadership role there. So I can't control when I'm cast and when I'm called. But it's my podcast, so I get to control. I get to call the shots there. So it's my ability to be able to be like, okay, I'm at Smosh when they need me. When they don't need me, I can work on my projects. And Spitball is one of them. Another one of my best friends, Lily, and I, we launched our sort of comedy duo partnership. I hesitate from calling it sketch because what we have planned is an entire large-scale production, which will include sketch comedy, but also interstitials and some digital presentations. So overall, we are working on a very genre-bending, culture-clashing show that we want to put up. And we've been previewing sketches across our Instagram and TikTok, kind of showing like nuggets of what you're expecting to see. But the show at large is one through line. All of these sketches string together and tell the story of How I Met Your Masi, which is what we call it.
And this is going to be all performed live?
It'll all be performed
and
live.
It's like 90 minutes?
It'll be about 90 minutes. Uh-huh. Yeah, a full show. It'll be comedic, of course, but also it will have the heart of drama. It's a real story, and I don't want to spoil what's to come.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
But it's, I think, incredibly unique, and it also feels very... feels like an homage to who I am, who we both are. But you know, speaking toward my experiences, Lily is also South Asian, you know? And even though I grew up in Texas and, you know, there was definitely not a lot of Indian people around me at school, in my very specific religious community, which is like zoomed in Muslim called Ismaili, that is the community that I belong to. And, you know, I actually don't know if
I've heard that word.
I've never
before,
said it on camera, really? Actually. This is the first time that I've kind of put that out there. But it's kind of like speech and debate where, like, when there's another Ismaili, they're going to be like, holy shit, you're Ismaili.
Yeah,
you know? Very specific. But there was a concentrated community in San Antonio. They're everywhere. But in San Antonio, I was surrounded by, I had a ton of friends who were Ismaili, and that was my friend group growing up. But I wasn't exactly comfortable in it. I was constantly comparing myself. I was constantly competing. I was behind. Again, like, that was all involved in, like, the bullying aspect, too. So there was a lot of trouble kind of mixed in with that. And for that reason, I think I kind of didn't have a lot of South Asian friendships in my life. I was kind of ultimately scarred by that. And now I'm in LA and, you know, again, through the story, I met Lily, who is another South Asian woman who I have found companionship in, you know? And there isn't the sense of jealousy or comparison. It's none of that. I want her to win in every single way. And so that is kind of coming together in our story as well, right? This idea of you can meet another a person that belongs to your community, in my sense, another brown woman, and seeing her and thinking like, oh, well, she's taking this role away from me, or she's going to audition for this and I need this. And it's just kind of like all of that is dissipated.
And
through our work, it really has shined through that there's unity in our duo. And together we are stronger. We tell this amazing story that includes diversity and, again, comedy, heart. There's a lot behind it, so I'm very excited to put it up, and also debut some of my like comedic writing skills, which I don't always get to do.
Have you ever thought about moving to Antarctica, where December 21st is daylight for 24 hours straight, the brightest day of the year?
You know?
Yeah.
I have never.
I think I'm just putting it out there. It'd be kind of cool, and we could shoot tons of videos.
Okay.
It'd be great.
I mean, if it's a business thing, then we can write off.
I think it could be pretty great for everyone involved.
I'd be down.
Cool.
I could slap you in Antarctica.
Done. Guess who slapped me in Antarctica?
That's how we top 15 million.
Yeah, and you just slap me and I go falling through the ice sheets that are melting. And then it's
good.
Also environmental.
Right?
It's great.
We get and it then, all. Like, I'll, like, my hand will stick to your face.
Yeah.
And it'll just be there at all times.
And you'll fall down through the layers of ice with me, and we'll both be missing, and we'll be martyrs for... No, that's going to be a lawsuit, huh?
Who's Anthony and Arasha?
We have so many good ideas. I hope someone's writing this down.
Yeah, no, they've got it.